Is this an omnidirectional mic? I was told to speak up, which was implying that some people couldn't hear Duncan well enough. That didn't work. I've been reading from this recent book, new book, Expect Delays, a lot lately. And so I thought it would, and I did so the other night, so I thought for this afternoon I would read some earlier poems and then maybe get to some. I'm in a large movie theater. I go to the John. Standing at one of the urinals next to me is Fred Astaire. He zips up his pants and says, "I'm a loser." I look deep into his sunglasses, their mirrored lenses, and I say, "Oh, you're doing all right." He is visibly moved by the open-hearted and believable way I say this. Melting milk. Do things then happen, despite our knowing, and is each misnomer but a dream? Natural hiked up detail consciously during years of anxious foreshortening, now distanced by tinsel cup, ring, ball, heart, horseshoe, and snail, acts like visibility of tempos irreducible to a fractious stance. So find any plausible footing and grab. Do we get to stay over? Sorry, says recorded time. Didn't get it. Lost my concentration. First error, the profile seen double, smooths it out and forklifts ballast. Verso, enter nameless emptiness, heavy on comparison, contingency, conceit. How's it getting dark? Because things line up in a buddy system, a grab bag of rimless data, milking lights, red ball to green spool as we think. Ash is crystal. Ecstasy is near. In a hand not my own, a blank wall is singing to be separate from the rest. It is too mild for the casually attired to be living among their glittery glassine poses, or else my superstitions are wrong, built sideways from a limb, or anyhow panting. But why fuss? If personality were legal tender, hours would pass for coin of the realm. As it is, not one will stir for the detached, the slow dickering of affect and demise leading to the dustbin at heart. I speak volumes across the rim of a quail. I glisten in footage to smother all currency. And as I crumble, I succeed. Empire elect of a most honorable science, knowing the babble that toil concludes, condones. Now, this is a poem in two parts called Ode. And in a way, the idea was to, well, I don't know if it was an idea, but the way it worked out was two parts that were written pretty much in a different sort of diction. Midnight moonlight mobbed Dante's bridge. Nights you were arduous to ward off cheap distress. Anxiety earned like yesterday's pay. Correction can't dramatize itself, probably shouldn't. January, passing maples in a car, provisionally bright, alive, and at the controls, wrong. No worries, except motion prevaricates. There isn't much of it in the right places. A little of who you are suspected to involve. If I could, I would do so out of excess, not necessarily a bad thing. Cue me and I'm on. Clue me in and I'm yours. Now I'm going to name that tune, suggest a title, indicate strongest love and hate scenario, first sign of spring, first serious encounter by chance with the rich and strange. Whoever scribbled white markings on the floor at our feet was shameless and lacked character. I'm just peeing in the wind, meaning resilient, dizzy, and frayed. Rain hammers pearls on the skylights in a pair of red rain boots, decalcomania, under ordinarily visible penises and breasts. One house actually had a barometer, although it never did any work, neither rising nor falling, the steady as she goes on the surface of the wall in the grand living room behind the sofa in a well-polished mahogany frame. Easy does or easy doesn't. Inspirited takes care of fathoms dense, with passing hims and hers amassed around the alcove. Watch the hook. Beware the hook. Hemming a summit, pulsing white tusk, skies, maritime, dray. Bub, my father's voice. Wrist bone shivers. Dreamed I hopped off a big white truck, Queens Boulevard, and lost my gear. 2. Sunlight fractures the plexiglass, fanning around sturdy trunks and boughs, sly shadows of bush in the yard-high noon, cow trails wild thought has mapped. Rain, sorrow, brain sweat, and fatigue, eagerness of insane, whomsoever eyes take in and fix, required. Coordinated gales of laughter, light, and love on the way home from the sleepy-headed doctor's office. A fish that eats, birds that freak in unison, bugs at their labors do the dirty work, a rapid boil, politesse du cœur, politeness of or from the heart, in the assembled body, assuming the bodily appearance of a body of two. The small boy rolls some marbles around on the floor of the house. One gets lost, a pointless story, but suffused with recognizable colors that travel far. Time is important, making as it does elbow room for happenings of note to occupy quasi-permanent niches in estimable space. Probably you knew all this, because something tells us, as is its wont, and the occasional savage, trance-like state of people in the process of singing, being heard. So over time, you realize, I do anyway, or I have, that certain things accumulate of certain kinds in poetry, and without particularly one's intending it. And at a certain point, I realized that I had been writing a lot of poems that I came to call, or have come to call, fact-driven poems. These are poems that sort of begin with some kind of maybe even stray fact or something that I come across or something that comes to mind or I see, and then that fact connects to other facts and down the line. And it's interesting to see how those dots connect. So one poem is called Algebra, and it's really I remember going from one school to another and applying to that second school, and I had a prepared statement, which was, mathematics is my nemesis. Because I had to explain why I was getting all these, I don't know, C's in mathematics, you know, and worried that I wasn't going to be accepted in this second school. So this is called algebra. It cost the apartment, because I also loved in algebra these propositions, like the train will leave the station, you know, at noon, and it's 45 miles to Olema. But there aren't any tracks, but the train is going anyway. How soon? It cost the apartment tenant owners in the cooperative $3,000 per apartment to install automatic self-service elevators for access to every floor, plus the understanding that the former elevator men operators are not going to be laid off. Now the elevator men will stand around in the lobby on the ground floor sorting mail, answering calls on the house phone and occasionally assisting the doorman, say if the doorman goes to fetch a cab for one of the tenants or a guest. Also, closed-circuit television gets installed in every elevator and in the lobby at strategic points, levels of privacy thereby being ensured or diminished, depending. It is work, an ordinary ceremony. But at least one tenant believes it is unjust. Stunning to think of the men who taking parts as doormen or elevator operators and likewise the maintenance crew of handymen made the building their place of business for in some cases as many years from the time I came to live there as a child to now when I go there as a visitor. To the three or four who are still there working, greetings. One, I would ask, do you still go fishing in Sheepshead Bay? A couple of others still maintain their high Irish brogues, charcoal gray uniforms with matte black shoes. And there was Eddie McCaffrey who would say, lifting his fist, one blow from McCaffrey would do ya. Figure with the A, B, and C sides, 36 apartments. My mother lives in 11A. After 37 years, Harold's well-trimmed pencil-lined mustache has somehow managed to remain permanent jet black. So I guess these were written fairly close together. This one is called Red Devil. Oh, you know, in those days the Irish had the lock on building maintenance, you know. And now in New York, it's Croatians a lot, or Montenegrins, guys from that side of the Adriatic, anyway. Interesting. There's one Irish guy. He said he used to sing a light opera, and somehow. Now he's, you know, doing the door. But it's the same thing. We had that building had a manual elevator up until last year, which broke down just about every month, you know, and eventually, so the shareholders, oh, well, you get the picture. Red Devil. The Red Devil perched with his sword, a little to the left above the profile of Dante on the torn square of wrapping paper pinned to the wall that shows a series of Italian cigar box labels. Dante is one of them, as In Veil at the tear edge is another. Dante wears his customary slightly pinched, fierce, fuck you expression, which is not directed at anyone personally, the viewer, but registers inner struggle toward thought and concentration. The Red Devil was one of a string of Italian restaurants around Broadway in the theater district circa 1950, where I used to go for supper with my parents between Sunday movies. It was my favorite for spaghetti and meatballs, and within easy walking distance of the best theaters, the Rialto, Strand, Roxy, Paramount, Capitol, and Lowy's State. My father had lived and worked in Rome during the 30s. He so enjoyed speaking Italian with the jovial, hefty waiters. And I would have Chianti mixed with water like a real Italian kid. By the door and on the front of the menus was a red devil, the piquant muted red of spaghetti sauce. One time, as we were leaving the place, getting on our coats, there was a tall, stately brunette standing near us, adjusting her mink wrap. She was sexy. I was 12. I froze and gawked. Then I noticed my father looking at her too, with a funny light in his eyes. I don't know which way my mother was looking, but for a split second, my father's look and mine clicked, and he gave me a very knowing glance. I felt something slip into place. It was our first shared joke as men. This left of these, I think, so-called fact-driven things, has gone through various versions because of the facts. I kept trying to determine. First, I got something wrong about who wrote the song, and then it was difficult to determine when this live performance of it had occurred. Supposedly unrecorded, but it was. It's a poem called Signature Song. Bunny Berrigan first recorded I Can't Get Started with a small group that included Joe Bushkin, Cozy Cole, and Artie Shaw in 1936. Earlier that same year, the song, written by Ira Gershwin and Vernon Duke, and rendered as a duet patter number by Bob Hope and Eve Arden, made its debut on Broadway in the Ziegfeld Follies. By 1937, when Berrigan recorded it in a big band setting, I Can't had become his signature song, even though within a few months, Billie Holiday would record her astonishing version, backed by Lester Young and the rest of the Basie Orchestra. Lovers for a time, Lee Wiley and Berrigan began appearing together on Wiley's 15-minute CBS radio spot, Saturday Night Swing Club, in 1936. Berrigan died from alcoholism-related causes on June 2, 1942. Although I Can't Get Started is perfectly suited to Wiley's deep phrasing and succinct vibrato, she recorded the ballad only once informally in 1945 during a New York theater engagement. The Spanish Civil War started in 1936 and ended in 1939 with Generalissimo Francisco Franco's forces entering Madrid. I've settled revolutions in Spain, goes Gershwin's lyric, just as odd. Sorry. Flip. I'm flipping. They used to say. I was the first person to impersonate John Fitzgerald Kennedy on a stage in 1960 during election week. And, it wasn't flipping, it was wigging, which was even better. Kenneth Koch wrote a play called The Election, which was a parody and followed every night of election week, the Jack Gelber play, The Connection. And my entrance line was, because I was trying to figure out where Jackie was. That was part of the thing. And then the other thing was that the candidates were all waiting for the vote, the way the junkies in Gelber's play were waiting for the dope. And I stumble on stage, and the idea Kenneth had was, all he knew about Kennedy was he had gone to Harvard. So it was supposed to be, "Oh man, I'm wigging." Which wasn't how Kennedy spoke at all. And nobody at Harvard did either. But in prep school, you would hear that. "A lady at her writing table. I chose love and friendship over work, then work and friendship over suspended disbelief. Won't love conquer all? I'll never work again. Don't call me." This may be, there's a kind of a, the poems at the end of one book sort of link to the poems in the next. This is called Compass Points. "All over herself, things said to my face, blank of luster to which ledges speak, things said, correct objective with slight bias, you or your dog. Oh, disturb the kettle to Edvard Munch, assembly of ditches, horizon asserts. You or the dog ear, dumped by the seaside, pudding the sun never soaks, beggars events. How quickly absorb spoken caval over moist mist recital. Slips ultimately left vertical of her being, blistering, sea starts, brought you tease." I didn't take my watch out either, so whistle when it's over. This is called The One God. "Once heaven was just a boy and a girl and a path to the beach. That was before the rooms were gutted and you learned how to exhibit bereavement would earn your weight in brimming moonloggers, literally the bee's knees. The shoulders of Roland de Smoke cuddle two abreast on a tray. While air lasts, cities also die. Old gas bags with quilted manners, pre-puce, because the English taste in pictures slackened. Then again, despite the poison crumbs, the two just walk on tiptoes out of doors, pressing along the keen incline. What will happen? What to say if and when the first door opens, the wings flutter in turn, as nights subside." In the middle of the book is a set of acrostics, written occasional poems, written in the acrostic form, name down the side, in capital letters. Lines sometimes rhyming, all of them written for, birthday. In this case, for a wedding, Jim and Nina, in 2003. And it's also kind of a celebration of the ampersand. "Just as you were saying your mutual I do's, infinitesimal bingo, 'twas the enamored cosmos sounding off in perfect pitch, My love's, I heard it humming plainly. Marriage on earth has this huge, undeniable in it. The ampersand of dailiness and rapture, of wow and whoops, of piecemeal logic and prosprandial why not, so on and etc. Nuptiality's stupendous song of pronoun life in tandem is yours for openers and for keeps. A music most notable for keen varieties of I, you, he, she, and it, and thus of tension and release. And hence, ad infinitum, this cosmic sing-along. Nina, Jim, Jim and Nina, exult. Nina and Jim, good night. How much time have we got? One more? Oh dear. How am I to choose? 10 more? All right. Okay. All right. Well, one more. One more brief. Birthday greetings to you. One of very few good excuses ever given for life on earth.
So the poets have been kind enough to do a sort of informal Q&A, so I'm going to invite Duncan back up to share the podium with Bill and open the floor up to questions.